Meeting will come to order. We don't quite have a quorum, and so we won't adopt any minutes yet, but we just need one more. Members, you've just had handed out the summary, and you see why I did this, because we're so overwhelmed with policy ideas this year from both parties, and some of them, the summary you see, last meeting we heard about the Gardner, the Houseman, the Anderson, the Downey. Representative Holberg has a bill that Representative Leader is hearing in his committee. It is a version of an amendment she offered on the House floor to the bonding bill, and he's hearing it in his committee. And then Representative Champion has a bill that is scheduled in state and local government. We're going to hear from them today as to its relationship to bonding. And then last meeting we talked about the Rukavina Buy America, the Knuth, and Kalen encouraged to meet state climate goals. Is this a second Downey thing? Or is this
that
just
was
up
the
here?
Floor
okay. Oh, the floor amount amendment. And then last meeting we didn't get to any of Representative Clark. So Representative Clark, if you're here, do you want to speak from there, or do you want to
sure.
speak from however you'd like to do it? And what you have in your packets, these were a couple of amendments that she was going to offer in committee, and we knew that in several of the cases they were some issues either traveling separately or that we had other issues about, and so we're hearing about them here. And then when we've heard Representative Clark's, then I'd like us to have a bit of a discussion. Last time we heard from Admin and Deed and MMB about their responses, and I don't know if any of those state agencies are here today and if they want to comment on the remainder that we're hearing today, but we'd certainly invite that. And then I want to get a sense from this committee. This whole direction of policy is something clearly the House has more of an interest in than the Senate. The Senate chair has not usually been too interested in the language, and in this case, the governor was not interested in some of that language that was in the House bill. And I would just be interested in some feedback from the committee as to your point of view, since clearly, because they show up in committee and on the floor, I'd like to have some discussion about that. So, Representative Clark, I think most others we have heard from except yours. So, talk us through the amendments that you...
First, Madam Chair, I'd like to look at the targeted employment
the
amendment. And the reason...
2365?
Yeah, it's A-10.
A-10.
And the reason I'm doing that, and do you want me to sit here or...
Wherever you'd like.
Maybe I'll go over there because I want to invite a couple people to play.
All right. A-10. Two A-10s? Oh, 2365.
Representative Champion, do you want to come join me? The A-10 topic is actually part of a bill that Representative Champion is sponsoring. We have a couple of witnesses we'd just like to talk about, and I'm going to let him talk to you in detail about this, but basically we're saying that we want to apply to the capital bonding bill the same kind of targeted employment provisions for communities who are often left out of the jobs that are being created in some of the state funds that we bring forward. In this bill, we want to make sure that we're paying attention to that, too. So I think I'll let Representative Champion take us through what this talks about, because it refers to Section 16C, which is in the bill that he's going to have a hearing on in which committee?
In state and local governments.
State and local governments.
And welcome to the committee. And so we would be interested in what's the concept and its connection to bonding.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. Briefly, I'm working off the Senate version. There's a bill that I put forward that simply says that for the purposes of bond proceeds, that it is my belief that before bond proceeds are provided or sent out to a recipient, that there are certain things that agency must collect from the person that or people or organization that they're going to enter into a contract with. And the whole idea is to really make sure that when we think in terms of creating jobs and opportunity for Minnesotans, that truly it reflects all Minnesotans. And we know that whenever there is this sort of notion that's put forward around creating opportunities for all Minnesotans to really work, that the way that certain systems are in place right now, it doesn't usually filter down sometime to every member of our wonderful fabric of society. And so we wanted to be assured that we had a guiding principle. A guiding principle, from my vantage point, is very important. Because we want to say, when we think in terms of our Minnesota values, that it is a value to us that all folks from all communities are able to improve their quality of life. And if we're creating a jobs bill, that these jobs are not just for a certain segment of our wonderful society, but for every member of our society. And sometimes you have to be very strategic if you want a desired outcome. And that desired outcome is diversity, is improving all of our quality of lives. And so when you look at this particular notion or my bill, it talks about the bond proceeds must require as a part of the of any bid or proposal for a contract or agreement from any business, a plan to recruit individuals to perform work who are unemployed, and we have a lot of unemployed folks, especially targeting communities experiencing disproportionately high rates of unemployment, including but not limited to low income, rural, tribal communities, and communities of color. Looking at also recruiting individuals to perform work from available training providers, including but not limited to opportunities, industrialization centers, construction trade unions, tribal groups, colleges, or nonprofits working in tribal communities. It also talks about the dissemination of information, because I believe that it's very important that we get information out to all communities so that people can make an informed decision as pertains to their ability to participate and knowing where they need to go in order to do so. And then lastly, it has a reporting requirement that we believe that it's important, not just that we say it's important for there to be an intentional plan to include, but also that information should report back. Mm-hmm. How are we to be assured that we in fact disseminated information, that we created opportunities for these other groups, from the unemployed to the low income, are truly engaged and a part of the process? And so DEED would collect this information, and that would be reported back to this committee or to the legislature, just for accountability purposes and transparency. And so that's it in a nutshell, and I think it would be important for us to just briefly hear from Lewis King from Higher Minnesota. Yeah.
Thank you.
You can sit here.
Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for having me. I'm Lewis King, President, CEO of Summit Academy, OIC, and also a member of Higher Minnesota. I appreciate the opportunity today to sit before you and bring forth the information that tells you why this particular measure is warranted. As you probably know, Madam Chair, I've spent a great deal of my professional career putting people to work. We believe that the best social service program in the world is a job, and at a time when we're cutting the safety nets, we can't afford to leave anyone on the sidelines. Over the last 24 months, I've discovered something that has kind of weakened the state of Minnesota at various levels of jurisdiction, from the city through special governments, but particularly when we got to the state. My first experience was at the ballpark, Twins ballpark, and we found out that it took the ballpark authority to really say to the contractors, this is important to us. After months of working with the contractors, we got nowhere until the ballpark authority stepped in Hennepin County, and then They surpassed their minority hiring goals, finished on time, and finished under budget. So it didn't hurt anyone. And it was the largest project going on in the state. We did the same thing on TCF as well under the leadership of Kathleen O'Brien. I've spent the last 18 months discovering the contracting process at MnDOT, as you might have noted, through hires activities, both in active citizenship as well as testifying here at the legislature. We again determined that it is the commissioner and his people who have to be willing to make sure that the rules are upheld for all folks. And we're currently in negotiations with MnDOT now, and we're cautiously optimistic. That brings us to the current state of affairs around the bonding bill. And what I found in the state, and this is quite surprising, that you essentially have three major groups that control your real estate: University of Minnesota, Minsky, and the Department of Administration. We have a very solid relationship with the University of Minnesota. Again, Kathleen Bryan gets it. We get in there, we project the projects, and we work forward. We have not been able to really figure out how to connect appropriately with the other state agencies. We're still trying to sort that out. And frankly, it shouldn't be that difficult. It should not be confusing. They should not be understaffed when it comes down to ensuring that people have appropriate opportunities. And it should be transparent. None of those conditions exist. And so as we have the great debate now about it's settled. What's not settled is who will work and who will get the opportunity. And so we feel that it's very important that this type of transparent accountability be put into place so that people who do business with the state of Minnesota understand that we are serious about ensuring that all segments of our population enjoy the economic opportunities that are before them. And I put it on the table as this. When I was meeting with someone from Minsky the other day, they noted that with MnDOT, there are federal requirements that then have very vigorous, if you will, enforcement measures attached to them. At Minsky, that's not their practice. That's pushed off the Minnesota Department of Human Rights, so it's kind of like, well, don't talk to us about that. That's somebody else's responsibility. And I was kind of stunned because I spent most of my life as a soldier prior to coming to Minnesota. And when I talked to a young boy about joining the Minnesota National Guard, he would be under the command of Governor Pawlenty, and so would be obligated to carry out his orders. At the same time, he could have a brother who's trying to get a construction job here on a Minsky project, and the state is not the body that's going to carry out the fullest measures. And so we need these types of reporting requirements so that people know that the state is just as serious as the federal government and that we care about our citizens. It will not be an undue practice on any of the folks, and I understand that it was dealt with in the Senate because of the fiscal matter, but I remind people that freedom is not free, economic freedom is not free, and we're looking to you now to help ensure that all Minnesotans enjoy the economic opportunities afforded by the bonding bill. Thank you, Madam.
So that gives you a sense of the concept and its relationship to the bonding bill. So I think that's any additional information, Representative Champion. Okay, good.
No, nothing further, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. And then Representative Clark, you had Representative Murphy had a question.
Representative Hausman.
Sorry.
Are we doing details?
Well, what we're this sheet that you see is kind of the summary of what we'd like to talk about today. And the three that we didn't get to were Representative Clark's issues. If you need details, what I'm going to get from you today is a sense about your advice relative to all of the interest in the House on policy relating to the bonding bill. So if you have clarifying questions, they would absolutely be appropriate.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Champion suggested that the report would come to the committee from and to the legislature from the Commissioner Deed. And Deed wasn't one of the agencies that the testifier from higher recommended. And so I wonder how valuable would that report be then? And maybe it's too picky for
I see there, I didn't realize, we had two other questions too, so, and I don't know if they'll be for Representative Champion or Clark or. Confusion about a gathering or reporting agency.
Now, Madam Chair, Representative, we are in the process of also tweaking some language on here, but the bottom line is that we want to make sure that the body that is responsible for overseeing certain aspects of those bond proceeds, in fact, becomes the body who gets that information back. Now, I've had some discussion with Deed and others as pertains to who should compile this information, how should it be presented back to the committee or even the legislature. But for us, it's the notion of accountability and making sure that we have some real measurable a metric that we can look at and say, okay, what happened? Did we do exactly what we said we were going to do, and what impact was it on DBEs and other communities that we believe to be really important? All communities are important, but I'm saying specifically when we think in terms of low income or tribal communities. So we would just make sure that there is some tweaking in the language and make sure that the right body receives the information. If I heard your question correctly, I was in transit.
Representative Howes had a question.
Yeah, Representative Champion, your idea is good. The problem I have is this. If the state agencies are going to do this, I see it's very difficult for them to do many of these things. You know, the amount of workers hired from certain areas, the amount of hours. And I feel that they're going to push this off onto the architects, engineers, general contractors, subcontractors, etc. And that's one of the reasons that government work always costs more to build something, because it's always more that the contractor is asked to do. Minsky project, I don't see somebody from Minsky going off on a daily basis to the site. It's a large site, you have many different subcontractors working. It's very difficult to determine how many people you have there, period, no matter where they come from. So my concern is this: if this were to move forward and ever become a law, I'd want it to say that the agencies have to do it, and they cannot pass this on to the contractors and the subcontractors, because that's just going to raise the price.
Madam Chair, Representative, that is a very important point, and I'll make a point, and then I'll let Mr. King speak to this as well. That's one intriguing discussion that I've had today with Dee, for an example. And we are committed to making sure that the information that we are requesting is streamlined but yet necessary, because and that is not a cost prohibitive. We don't want there to be an increased cost, but we have to also think about the fact that what we are asking and putting forward is important when we think in terms of making an investment that's necessary to improve the quality of life of all Minnesotans. And so when we think in terms of our value, we got to make sure our values line up with the public policies that we implement and put forward. And so that's where we collaboratively work hand in hand with our state departments to say, okay, how do we in fact get this information? And how do we get information that's user-friendly, but also we can use the information as a means to improve capacity building and really just making sure our desired outcomes are those things that are realized. So I don't think it's going to increase that cost. Whatever cost, that whether it is a fiscal note, it's an investment necessary to improve our quality of life. And I'll let Mr. King respond, and then if there's something I can state further, I'm willing to do so.
Mr. King.
Madam Chair, Representative House, as a matter of record, companies that bid these jobs accept minority hiring goals when they have them as a part of the deal. Further, the general contractors, the major contractors in the area, all have EEO and affirmative action officers whose job it is to come up with the plans by which they will meet minority hiring goals, collect the information, and then forward it to the appropriate body. So when people sophisticated enough to do a $200 million job or $40 million job, have people on board, that's from McGuff to Mortensen, to help them with this type of effort. So we're not talking of the small jobs or the little ones. I'm looking at the major stuff and the major players that get the work. That's number one. Number two, if a goal or anything is to be accomplished, and as business people, we understand this, there must be a plan. Any business person walking in saying, I'm going to attain a financial goal or an on-time delivery goal, has to have a plan for getting that done. We've developed tools that will help them do the same thing with minority hiring. They don't necessarily have to take this task on by themselves. We've demonstrated that we have the capacity in our community to get it done, and we've done it on two major projects here in the state of Minnesota, and we intend to pilot it again on the top 10 major projects for MnDOT this season. So, and we're entering in those discussions with the contractors in the room. But to say that you cannot do this and to deprive people out of an opportunity because you don't have the staff or the cost, while at the same time you're taking the public's money and making the promise that you will reach the goals, is not acceptable. And we're willing to help make that happen. For the most part, the major contractors that we're dealing with welcome this type of tool because they do want to meet their hiring goals.
And my understanding is I-35W Bridge met their hiring goals.
Yes.
And either the Gophers or the Twin Stadium, I don't know which one.
Both met, Madam Chair, both met the goals. And, in fact, at the Twin Stadium, a $400 million project, I was part of a ceremony at Mortensen where we recognized 25 subcontractors for exceeding the goals. And we used projections so that by phase of the operation, by labor group, by subcontractor, you could forecast out in time what type of people you needed and when you needed them. You treat this just as you treat other procurement and material purchasing elements of the project. It's not an add-on. It's part of the deal.
I have Mahoney, Davids, and Scott.
Chair,
Follow up to that point.
No one doesn't want to do this. My point is if the agencies force the general contractors to do it, that's one thing. But if you say they're already doing it, then why are we doing this?
Madam Chair, Representative House, we have implemented this on a very limited basis, and there is much education to be done with both the state agencies and the contractors. As we hear today in this economy, there is a new normal. The practices of the past simply cannot stand. So it is necessary when I walk into a room with someone, I can go talk to two different agencies at this point and get two different answers about what is the procedure for engaging contractors to make these things happen. That is the reason that we're seeking remedy here with the legislature to ensure that going forward we've not only aligned our values, but we have the law as a tool to help us further clarify the procedures that should be used. People say, they don't say they don't want to do it. They say that as currently structured, the statute does not require them to.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Champion, I'm looking at this. Is this the bill we're working off of? This is the 810-2365?
Yes. I think there are various versions in the House and the Senate now.
He's holding up.
This is the one that I had in my packet, the A-10-2365.
This is Representative Clark's amendment and not Representative Champion's
Chair,
bill, I think.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Clark, we're working on the A-10 amendment, which basically utilizes what's in 16C, which is the bill that also Representative Champion is presenting in another committee. So we're bringing that by reference into this bill.
Representative Mahoney.
Madam Chair, and to whomever, what I'm trying to find out is the front page. I'm not sure. Are you creating new law, or are you asking them to keep records? And then on page two, are you asking for reporting? Because I think page two looks pretty self-evident that you're asking for reporting. But I'm just trying to figure out if page one is new law.
Chair and Representative, we are not creating new law. That law is already in the books. Right. What I am asking, and there are some nuances to 16C.16, or even that chapter that we can talk about in real time, but we are not creating any new law. But what we're saying is that as a guiding principle, we believe that it's important for there to be inclusion. Important enough that that's why I propose that we put that guiding principle language as a part of the bonding bill. And so that is why we were asking for this language to be there as a guiding principle. And that there is the reporting component that you do see on the second right. page.
So
Madam Chair,
Mahoney.
Then here's, I mean, guiding principles, mm-hmm. putting our values into statute is fine. Here's what I have a concern with, and for this amendment, it is starting on line 1.15, recruiting individuals to perform work who are unemployed, especially targeting communities experience disproportionately high rates of unemployment. How does that play into an electrician or a plumber or a boilermaker or an iron worker? Someone who's had 2, 3, 4 years of training before they're a journeyman or woman. Because you can't just take someone off the street and have them install piping 400 feet, 100 feet up in the air. So how are you going to address that with this? And Mr. King.
Mr. King.
Madam Chair, Representative Mahoney, it's good to see you again, sir. Prior to taking on the policy-making element of the campaign that we're engaged in, we built a training machine that is aligned with labor. We just signed a historic agreement with the 49ers to have the first joint training program where my organization purchases simulators. Kids get their hands on them. Last 5 weeks, they go up to Hinckley and actually learn to run the Tonka toys. We're planning an expansion to St. Paul, where in the second phase of the training, they will actually take it at the Carpenters Union here in St. Paul, and those are our partners. For years, we've had partnerships with Dunwoody and the plumbers. Had a guy finish number 13 out of 384 applicants into the apprenticeship program. We're also currently discussing a partnership with the electricians in Minneapolis, where our guys won't just get solar and photovoltaic, they will also become general electricians. We recognize the current economic downturn and the impact that it has on labor. However, the state demographer still puts on the table that many people like myself are over 50 in the trades, all right? And guess what? Your knees do wear out, and if they stop taking in people for 2 to 3 years, you're going to have a hole in your membership. So you have to continue to build, although selectively. We understand that. This is not just about the short term. This is about the long term. However, if we do not put the training mechanisms into place that reach into our communities so that we can keep our competitive edge as a region, we will find ourselves lagging. So we have to train the people, put those things in place, build the relationships, and also take a look at our policies and practices, because people don't mean any harm, but they've been used to doing things a certain way for so many years, and those practices fail to build bridges to the communities that in the future will be our workforce unless we continue to leave them on the sidelines, and that will cost us all. So to your question, we understand that. We work with our partners in labor. There will be some cases where the answer will be zero. But have a plan and know that going in, so there's not finger pointing at the end and you don't have to apologize and there's not the confusion, and we get the discipline for treating this effort just as we do all other business initiatives.
Well, and Madam Chair, that's kind of what I was trying to get to, because in my case as a pipe fitter, I know we canceled the class last year. We're canceling the class this year. We're going to have that big hole, but we're also not going to have the apprentices that I think you're calling for in this reporting. So I don't have answers to that. That's take a lot more thought on a lot of different people's part, but I just want that to be made aware here, because over the last 40 years we've tried to do things, and then all of a sudden when the goal is when we're trying to implement it, we don't have the right tools to implement it. And I'm concerned about that. I don't want anyone to be disappointed 2 years or 4 years down the road.
Mr. King.
Madam Chair, Representative Mahoney, your comments are well taken. And my good friend Harry Melander and I spent a lot of time and the AGC at table talking about these very things. We're reasonable people. And also, we've been at this long enough now that there are people on the bench of all colors and of both genders and ethnic backgrounds. We've been cranking them out. And so there are journey-level people out there where we find significant holes and we got to wait on the sidelines. We get that. But this is about professionalizing the effort, institutionalizing the effort, and also getting to the new normal, that we're not going back to the good old days for a long time. So we've got to be efficient in our efforts and avoid confusion so that everyone knows that we're serious about the business and we give them the tools necessary to be successful. That's what this will do.
Representative Davids and Scott, and then I think we're going to
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the minutes of March 9th, 2010.
We have a quorum. I like somebody who goes after the minutes of March 9th. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed. Minutes are approved. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've got several questions here on just how this would logistically work in a smaller county. Let's just say there's a really, really good project that passed in the bonding bill, like really good. And
say down in Chatfield.
Chatsburg. And it was, you know, unrightfully vetoed. But let's just say it hadn't been vetoed and it was needed to be done. And now we've got all these rules here. You mentioned a couple things. First of all, you mentioned something about how this doesn't apply to small jobs, but I don't see that in the language where it doesn't apply to small jobs. And that's one question about the small jobs, because it was a job of, I think, $2.2 million in the bill that should have been signed. And then my other question would be, are there any other surrounding states that have all of this extra regulation and hoops to jump through? And the next question is, in a small county like Fillmore County, where, first of all, I guess my question is for Deb Dyson. Is communities of color defined in law?
Ms. Dyson.
What is that? What color?
Madam Chair and Representative Davids, I don't know. I would have to look, but I don't know, and perhaps.
Well, my question is.
Not in this chapter of statute.
My question, maybe to Mr. King, how, in Fillmore County, where it's, we're one color, basically, how would this work as far as, you know, do you pick some of these? How are they prioritized? What's more important, being low-income rural or of a tribal community or having gone to a tribal college or a community of color or a union member or a community action partnership? What is there, like a scoring system that if I'm went to a tribal college and I'm in a community of color and I'm poor in a rural area, do I have a better chance than somebody that's unemployed, that's part of a union and part of a community action partnership?
Long question. Representative Davids asked you the question.
Madam Chair, Representative Davids. Representative Davids, this is meant to be, and that's why there are so many different categories in this guiding principle. It's meant to be flexible and respond to the community. And so if the community has only people of one color, and they happen to be poor, then it says to the people coming in there, you need to outreach to these folks as well because they deserve an opportunity to participate in this project. If, on the other hand, as you mentioned, they are laid off construction workers who are out of trades and can't feed their families, you should reach into these communities too. But you, or if you're building adjacent to North Minneapolis, you should reach into that community as well and find the people from the communities of color, the Latinos, the Hispanics, the Asian, the African Americans, women. You can find those folks, for the most part, in those communities. They also are low income, having been at 14% unemployment in Minneapolis when the city was at 3%. So this is meant to be flexible so that you have a tool to say, well, you know what, this is who was here. This is our plan for reaching them to ensure there's equitable opportunity, and here's what we're going to do to go forward. So it doesn't rank anybody or make anybody better than others, and I probably misspoke when I spoke to smaller projects and I apologize for that. My emphasis is primarily on the Twin Cities where my work takes place. However, as you can see here, it does not limit itself to the cities, but does mention the rural poor as well.
Well, Madam Chair and Mr. King, maybe, I mean, that doesn't really help because the way this is written, there's no priorities in what I'm looking for. I can see as an employer, I can get whacked from any side here because if I have someone that's low income and rural, but they can say, well, you hire someone that's low income and rural, but I should have somebody from a tribal community and a community of color. I mean, could this maybe be, as this would go forward, I know we're not voting on today, Madam Chair, but an appropriate measure may be to have a 7-county metro and let the rest of us live and make our own decisions on who we hire on the projects in our areas because this is really problematic. You look at number one and number two, there's no priorities, there's no combinations. An employer can get smoked from any side on this and be wrong no matter what they do. Because if they pick somebody, like I said, that's from a tribal community, a rural tribal community, but there's somebody else that's low income from a community of color, there's a huge problem here. You can't comply with this.
And what I heard you saying is this is primarily gathering data and reporting data for measurement. Is that what I understand the primary goal is?
Yes, Madam Chair. This is not to be confused with the participation goals that are already assigned.
Because they're already in.
They're already there.
Yeah, I understand.
They are already there. This affords the contractor a greater degree of flexibility in reaching into various communities, and it's used in other places in terms of training. I have language like this in the rules that govern my contract with the state agencies. It's almost verbatim. If you read the federal requirements, it says essentially it says serve poor people in areas experiencing disproportionately high unemployment and poverty, regardless of race or gender. That's the spirit of this principle.
Well, Madam Chair, that's not what the bill says. The bill or the amendment says on 1.12. Before a bond proceed recipient may spend money from a bond proceeds fund established under Section 16A, before they can even do this, they have to go through all this stuff.
Let me try something out here. If I just isolated a few words. Here's what I think the paper says, even though there are more words than that. Recruit individuals to perform work who are unemployed, and then you say especially targeting X. Recruit individuals to perform work from available training providers. Disseminate information about opportunities. In other words, those are the activities, right? Recruit, disseminate information, and then report on the outcomes. I mean, just kind of pulling some words on the page, that's really, in essence, what the amendment is.
Madam Chair, yes, and also please note at line 1.14, the last three words say a plan to. And that's what sets this all up. Mm-hmm. Put together a plan. It's deliver a plan.
Okay.
Because they've agreed to do it when they accept it. They agreed to meet the goals when they hired the contract. This says please provide a plan.
Representative Scott has stepped out of the room. Representative Eastland.
I wasn't going to ask the question, but I guess who determines that the plan, what the plan is? Who approves the plan? Who determines that it's a good enough plan so that you can start to get the money? I mean, if somebody signed a contract and they already agreed to this, they must have a plan in their head. What's the difference between that plan in their head and the plan that we supposedly have here that's written down that nobody approves? I don't. What is the plan?
Is that Mr. King? I think that'll have to be the last question.
Madam Chair, Representative Eastland, there are already measures in place that contractors should take into consideration. If we look across the broad band of our success about what people do and don't do, when plans are not present, we've not achieved the goals that we've set forward. That's our history. That's an undeniable fact. this is a tool that allows them to think through it. In some cases, they don't have to do it alone. There are organizations out there who get paid to help them, who actually have some skin in the game as well. This is not meant to be overly punitive or punitive anyway on a contractor. It simply says, if you have this to do, let's see a plan for doing it the same way that you deliver a plan for materials, a plan for safety, and a plan for financing. This is human capital, and it's probably our most important capital.
Representative Eastland?
Well, I hear what you're saying, but my question is who reviews the plan? Where is the information for the requirements to make the plan? What is the plan going to look like? I guess that's my question. I guess to me it's just a broad, wide open statement that we need a plan. And my observation would be, if the requirements are already in law that they need to be abiding by these principles, the contractor has already addressed those issues in their the way that they're going to proceed as a contractor. I mean, I just think it's the clarity. It's the fact that there's just tons of words here that maybe are well intended, but are so broad and wide open that, I mean, to me it seems like a very dangerous precedent to move forward on, because it's so wide open and open to a misinterpretation some kind of a lawsuit or whatever else that somebody has not met some kind of a requirement. I just see this as very, very wide open and kind of a direction that I don't see a need to go down until there's a much, much more specific purpose and design here to really get at the core of the issues. But that's just my reaction.
And I think, Representative Champion, you've gotten some sense of the questions, and it maybe helps helps you get ready for, I think you have the next hearing on the 17th,
yes.
Right? And I think what you're hearing is a little confusion about the language, and maybe spending a little bit of time on that before the next meeting might be helpful. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes.
And committee.
And then, Representative Clark, you had a healthy flooring amendment. That is the A10-2036B, which is in the packet.
Something with you. I wonder if I could take the third one, just because I have a fellow witness
and
here.
The third one was Representative Clark. I think you raised this already in committee, the question of, in our bill, it was the Pollution Control Agency that closed landfill cleanup.
Yep.
And your amendment said, basically, that when you do that work, you should conform to occupational safety and health standards, and additionally, you should develop a plan for each project and provide personal protective equipment before commencing on work, and then assure that there is on-site monitoring of compliance, I think were the three pieces.
That's right, Madam Chair.
So
thank you.
Representative,
you summarized
and
very
members,
well.
In your packet, that's the one that says it comes right out of House File number 2730, Grossman. That's the piece we're discussing right now, and Representative Purcell, welcome to the committee. I think, was it in your district that this particular...
No.
Okay. Representative Purcell.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, members. I'm going to let Representative Clark talk about this. I just, I'm along for technical support on this one.
All right.
Actually, very good technical support. When we were meeting with House Research to figure out what language to put in, I called on Representative Purcell because he does have a lot of experience with the landfill issues up in his district. And so this was actually dealing with a closed landfill over in Washington County that was going to be getting some funds. And what I did, I raised the issue that had come up over the summer and where I had noticed that the workers who were involved in the closed landfill in Washington County were not wearing protective equipment, even though the photographer and reporter who wrote an article about it said they were. And as a result of talking about what was really needed, and again consulting with Representative Purcell, we decided to put some additional language that said that not only should they conform with occupational safety and health, but there needed to be a safety plan, a human health and safety plan, and some sort of monitoring and reporting to our committees. Because I did, at your request, I believe, meet with the Pollution Control Agency, and basically they kind of brushed this off and just said there really wasn't a big concern. They were going to go back and then get back to me, and they did not. So, which is, you know, some of the problem I had over the summer. I had actually called OSHA and talked with Commissioner Spigen's people and, you know, tried to get clear on what was going on. And they, basically the whole situation seems to be one where there's just not a lot of concern. It bothered me to look at the people who were driving the big cats, the caterpillars, whatever you call them, were pushing the very hazardous waste that was in this landfill up onto great big mounds so that there then could be, as was required, new covers put down on the ground, and then the landfill itself, all the junk that was there, put back on top of it. The people who were driving the big machines were wearing protective equipment. I went out and happened to go out there and saw it, and they were wearing protective equipment. The people who were pulling the sheet back over the clay base that was there to then dump everything back on top of it were wearing their street clothes or street shoes. They were people of color. It really bothered me that there was such a disparity between the type of work that was being done and the people's protection as workers. So I thought and the other thing is, I observed that day and actually took some photos of when they were doing the pushing of the garbage up into these huge, huge mounds. It was flying all over. There was dust flying all over. And some of the neighbors who live out there, in very expensive homes, actually made some complaints. Because even though there was some spraying going on, there was still dust flying around. And for those reasons, we came up with this language, just to make sure that people's occupational health and safety as workers are being observed. And I took Representative Purcell's suggestions about having some monitoring done, because this is some of his experience. Maybe you'd like to say a little bit more about why we came up with that language.
Madam Chair, members, I guess specifically what when Representative Clark asked me about this situation, and I related to her my experience in working with the St. Regis Superfund site for the last 20 plus years on the Leech Lake Indian Reservation, and what the regulations required there in working around hazardous and toxic materials. And we just took the plain language of that and inserted it here, basically. And I think it down in 27.27, contaminants of concern, I'm sorry, 27.28, contaminants of concern, 27.29, contaminants of potential concern. It's my understanding, and my familiarity is with federal Superfund law and as opposed to the state landfill law, but that there would be in place a health and safety plan that included this language, and I'm under of the understanding that it's not in there at this time, so that there would be language here. There would be some kind of an investigation to determine what contaminants were there, and obviously someone determined that these cat drivers needed to have protective gear on, and I don't know what that determination was based upon, but there was something hazardous or toxic in that site, whether it was just the dust or if it was dust laden with some kind of a toxic substance. I don't know. I'm not familiar with the Washington landfill, but just taking the plain language basically those are from that language is from Superfund law, federal Superfund law.
Madam Chair, I might mention that actually I've been following this Washington County landfill for some time, and there are very serious contaminants there, not only volatile organic compounds, but this is where some of the perfluorochemicals are that were dumped by 3M, and this has been part of the 3M helped pay for the work that was being done there. I think they paid $8 million out of $20 million and added to the state's $20 million to clean up this landfill, because they do accept some responsibility. What I'm talking about is the health and safety of the workers who are doing the job that needed to be done.
And then, members, in the final bill is the following language under the closed landfill cleanup. Entities administering projects undertaken with funds in this subdivision must conform to OSHA standards under federal law and Minnesota Statute Chapter 182 and report to the legislature any violations. So that was the language in the final bill. But what we're doing is getting all of the amendments out on the table today, because then I've got to ask the committee for guidance going forward on this bill. So I think that's sufficient, Representative Clark.
Okay, thank you.
On this issue.
I appreciate
and
that.
And then we'll do the healthy flooring.
Thank you. The last one deals with, thank you very much. A requirement that I'd like to see in our publicly funded bonding projects, that when we are, when we're looking at the flooring that's being put down, that we follow the same kind of requirements that we do have in our Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, that the flooring that we're paying for, again, with public dollars, be safe and deal with the health of the people who are working in those buildings once they're constructed. So what I reference there is that any project that's funded with a bonding from this these laws must use non-carpet flooring alternatives to protect the public health as described in the Green Communities Criteria prepared by the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. And I believe this has been copied on the back of the language for people to look at. And it's green label certified floor coverings. Do you all have that?
Mm-hmm.
And it says mandatory. And this is actually, it is mandatory with the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency that we do not install carpets in certain below grade living spaces. And that if they are going to be using carpet, they have to meet the carpet and rug industry's green label certified carpet, both the pad and the carpet adhesives. What we're talking about here is that we've discovered over the years that a lot of the carpets that are being laid, that we've all laid sometimes in homes and sometimes in buildings like this, I don't know about this carpet, has a number of things going on. The carpet itself or the adhesive that is used to hold it down have volatile organic compounds that are dangerous to our health. And what I have learned is it can take a whole year for the compounds to actually be dispersed, and people are breathing them now. One of the groups of people that are most impacted by these are the little children who are crawling around on the floors, toddlers and so on. And of course their bodies are more vulnerable too, because they are the percentage of contamination that they are breathing in is much. A higher percentage affecting their bodies than us who are adults, but all of us are impacted by this. And so what I'd like to do is make sure that at the point now where we are constructing buildings in which there may or may not be carpet, that we make sure that either there's no carpet, there are good alternatives, which again, the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency has been working on this now for a couple of years, or they meet these carpet standards that are much safer for the people who are working with them, the people who are living with them once they're laid.
Okay, I think that's good. And then I have one more, and this one was added on the House floor and subsequently was removed in conference committee, and that was the E-Verify one. And I have included in your packets an NPR news article, which was the reason why, even though it was added on the House floor, we subsequently removed it. The amendment, which was an Emmer amendment, would have required the use of E-Verify for all bonding projects. And as we looked at the, if you look at this news article near the bottom, state officials have sought to verify employee status since 2008 when Governor Tim Pawlenty signed an executive order requiring e-verification. In June, a legislative auditor's report said the administration still wasn't checking its own employees, and one of the hang-ups was that they were concerned about the security of employees' private data. And then they had used a company called Lookout Services, I believe, and it... First of all, yes, Lookout Services of Bel Air, Texas, to verify that new hires were authorized to work in the United States, and discovered that NPR was able to access state employee data without using a password or encryption software. So with that little bit of information, we removed that policy language that was offered on the floor. So that, members, is kind of an attempt to summarize all of the policy language that was suggested at some point just this year, either in committee or on the floor. And so what I'm asking for is a brief discussion in this committee about this idea. We heard last time from MMB and Deed. PCA is here today, and I think admin commented on one of them. And on all of them, there are the implementing agencies have questions and issues of costs for implementation and so forth. They are usually unknown when we're in committee and on the floor. So that's background for my inviting advice from this committee about the rather broad array of policy. And this is definitely a bipartisan interest. Both Democrats and Republicans have an interest in policy language. So is there advice of committee members going forward?
Madam Chair.
Representative Solberg.
Well, Madam Chair, I'll start out, and I want other people to join in. It's always, I think some of these are very good policies for the state to adopt, but I think we always have to be careful and look at what are the unintended consequences, particularly when we add them to a bonding bill. I think that then it becomes tied to that particular project. If we have a general law for the policy for all bidded buildings in the state, I think that it serves us better to have a general law and not have this tied specifically to a bonding proposal. That doesn't mean we shouldn't have these kind of standards or have a good discussion on these kind of standards. I don't understand all the nuances of them, but we need to at least, I think, put out have good discussion on them.
Representative Clark.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I think what we're talking about is actually not having them, of course, in the bonding bill anymore, but as a separate, traveling separately as
one
advice.
One of the possibilities would be to have a policy bill as opposed to a bonding bill.
Right, and so that was my understanding, and I you know, withdrew my amendments from the bonding bill because I talked with the chair about having the opportunity to have them be part of a policy bill, and I think it's a really good idea. Perhaps there might be some tweaking that might be necessary for some of them, but I think they do kind of stand alone and can be, they relate back to the bonding bill. I really appreciated the opportunity to talk about those things, and many people had different ideas about how we could talk about the policy, but not have it be, I think as you were mentioning, Representative Solberg, not have it be tied specifically to the bonding bill.
Representative House.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I'm sorry. Well, we're out of order, but I'll let you go first.
Okay, thank you. I have a great deal of difficulty with two of them. That would be Representative Anderson S. and Champions. I don't think they're ready for prime time. I think there's just too many words here that have to be fixed. I'm trying to be very bipartisan here because I'm picking on the Democrat and the Republican, but I don't think they're ready. And you start doing the things that both of these would require of agencies or contractors, it's just going to keep raising the price. And I've always said government jobs cost more because of these things, well intended. But I just don't think they're ready. Not this year, maybe next year.
Representative Mullery.
Madam Chair, I think I probably agree with what's been said. I think Representative Solberg is probably right that if we are going to do this, it should be a state policy, not just in the bonding bill. But it's kind of like what I brought up, or what you brought up when I was trying to get more information on the bonding projects and how much each was going to actually put labor or dollars into the laborers' pockets. And it's kind of starting after the, closing the gate after the horse is out or whatever to do it this year. And I ran into that when I was trying to get information from Minsky. If we work on this, and maybe we should, some of us should spend some time over the interim working on it for future. But I think there's a lot of things should be, as you know, I worked with trying to get information on that issue. And I think there's more information we should require, but to go back and get it, and what Minsky and others said, and I think, and looking at Anman, I'm not sure, they might have been one of the ones that said, you know, these proposals have all been made, and figures based on certain things. If we're going to require different things, how do we... It throws off our specs and things like that that we bid on or that we drew up all the plans for. So I also think some of the things proposed in some of these may not work, but I think we need to really sort it out, and it's not just a couple of hearings or something like that. I just don't think that's the way to do this. This is pretty big stuff overall.
And that issue of timing, that was one of the, when Representative Clark, for example, offered her healthy flooring one, Representative Wagenius's concern was, since it said any project funded with an appropriation in this act, because we often fund pre-design and design before, that all that work may have already been done, and you really couldn't suddenly impose a different policy partway through. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have to say, you know, looking at this, because I have to put the caveat in that there actually was a piece of policy that I brought forth and put into the bonding bill this year, which was the related to the infrastructure grants. But I guess meaning
changing the name,
correct, from bioscience to technology infrastructure grants.
Innovative.
Yeah.
Innovative technology.
I'm glad it was your bill and I didn't have to, to remember it all. But as I look at it, I mean, you've got a dozen items here, and each and every one of them is a different committee's domain, so to speak. Gartner's rating criteria is really, you know, the preview of the finance chair of that particular committee, whether it's Minsky or Metro Parks or whatever, the chair of the committee. The shorter reporting time is MMB. Representative Anderson's tracking and reporting is kind of goes to every particular division. You know, and Representative Clark's environment issues that she's trying to put into the bonding bill. You know, I will make this comment. I'm not bringing any more policy back to, because I'm kind of surprised that what I'm seeing here. And I don't think we should probably do a policy bill and a bonding bill. I think that goes against what we've asked the chairs from other committees to do. Having said all that, that's just my personal feeling. And I'm going to answer Representative Clark's question about why somebody on a heavy equipment, you can ask for safety gear at any particular point on any particular job. And OSHA, it's kind of one of the regulations in OSHA that you're the contractor is supposed to provide it. So whether there was anything there or not, I don't have any clue or idea. Equipment operators probably just said, I don't want it. I do want a respirator. I ask for those all the time when I'm working.
Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I'm concerned, as Representative Hollis was, I think in the past, well, I've been involved in some of this reporting and all this, and the additional cost in contracts, it's something that you don't really realize, and we're in a competitive situation most of the time. But the thing I'd like to point out, there isn't a legislator sitting here that hasn't heard about mandates in healthcare, mandates and education, mandates and transportation. We're getting beat up by saying we have mandates. In the same token, we got this same situation, people carrying bills to get reduced mandates. So we got that vicious circle every legislative session. And I'm a little concerned about when you see all of this, where does it stop? I think we've bloated ourselves with costs. And I know in the division that I chair, some of these things that are mandated even at the state level, we don't give them the employees or the money to do it. And we're actually working against ourselves. I think, too, personally, we don't need the policy bill in the bonding bill.
Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree with a lot of the thought process going around here, but I guess I would add just a little bit of a different perspective that, you know, I think in the economic kind of circumstances that we find ourselves right now, to increase the regulatory side of this thing, it's just absolutely the wrong thing to do. No matter how well intended or how positive of a result, ultimately what it will do is if we put more and more requirements and regulations on contractors and builders and people who are out trying to do these jobs, we're just going to get less bids and we're just going to end up excluding people from the market. So, in one sense, we're trying to pull people into the marketplace by putting some requirements in, and the net effect is we're going to exclude people that are going to actually bid on these projects. I just think we're going the wrong direction. When we're trying to encourage economic activity, we need to put as little of a regulatory burden as we possibly can, I think, on those projects going forward so that they happen, and they happen in a way that works with the general economic environment that we're in.
I have Clark Erdahl Solberg Murphy. Clark.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, you know, I really like the fact that I can strongly line up here with Representative Anderson on the idea of tracking the number of jobs that are being created by our tax dollars. And I supported her proposal. And we actually have that in law covering some other parts of state government. So, for example, at Deed, we have a one-page form that a employer fills out that they have to say what they intend, what is the public purpose of the state dollar that they want, and that's a couple of lines maybe. What are the number of jobs that goal they have in mind as a goal, and then they report back what did they actually create as in terms of the number of jobs and what were the wages that were paid. It's a one-page form, and it helps us have accountability when people say that they need the public dollar, they got to have it, you know, to do the work, and they compete. And it helps, actually, I think, very much make sure that our tax dollars are accounted for and accountable. So that's what Sarah Anderson's proposal does, and it's building on existing law, which I think you're probably familiar with, too, Representative Mahoney. And I think the other part that that I was trying to do in terms of making sure that that people are recruited for these jobs who are not necessarily the folks who have an opportunity in many of our communities, again, low-income people, people of color, rural folks, that we look to see, did we give them a fair share of the jobs? That's just, again, accountability. It's not a huge, huge burden as far as I can tell. So that I just wanted to say that this is not, none of this is totally new. We have been down the road of making, some of this has to do with making sure, again, that the expenditure of our public dollars are for a good public purpose, that we're paying living wage jobs, we're not just wasting our dollar.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think there are some good things that were presented here today that, you know, maybe should be implemented apart from a bonding bill, but I don't think as part of the bill. We have enough barriers to getting the bill passed, and we don't need to put more barriers into it that make the bill more difficult to pass and then more difficult to implement once it has been passed. So I think that echoes a little bit what Representative Eastland was saying.
Representative Solberg.
Well, Madam Chair, I always like to argue against myself.
Last time you said unintended consequences. I'm taking notes.
Well, and you want to do that, but Representative Eastland, we also need to look at regulations that make sense. Just because a regulation is in doesn't mean it's a bad thing. If we had no regulations, I don't think we would like our particular society that we would end up with. We've been down that road, and we've seen pollution without any treatment at all dumped into rivers and lakes. So you have to, I think, have any of these proposals that are before us have good thought process on it, have testimony on what the pros and the cons, what are the unintended consequences of something, and if it makes sense, adopt it. Just because it's a regulation doesn't necessarily mean it's bad. If it protects the public health, that might be good. There's always a cost-benefit analysis in that regulation as well.
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chairman, I was pretty impressed with Mr. King's testimony and his enthusiasm and energy and his reading of We Can't Go Backwards. But I'm also quite impressed with many state employees that we have in our various agencies that deal with human rights and gender-specific or gender-neutral kinds of things. I think maybe we should think about doing an inventory of the laws that are already on the books that we don't emphasize a whole lot that address the concerns that Representative Clark brings out, not just this year but other times, and other people that bring policies out rather than rewrite new policies and get all these wordy things and single goals, and look at those state employees and the inventory of laws that are already on the books. And then when people are thinking about laws that we're going to pass in the future and projects that they're going to bring before the bonding committee and in various agencies that are developing their bills for the legislature to pass, some of them are housekeeping bills, we could take state employees to train other state employees and remind them of what's already on the books and that we are supposed to be more broad and that the umbrella should cover all the kinds of things that we do and that we want to do the right things and we have to think about new ways of doing things and new ways of addressing the issues that we've already got laws for and just serving as reminders in some kind of employee training session kind of things and maybe then in our projects that come before us, the people will be reminded enough that they will do what Mr. King was saying should be done. Just instead of tweaking the language into something that can be brought to the floor of the House of Representatives and maybe be voted up, maybe be voted down, take positive approaches in every agency concerning everything that we do and every purchase that's made and every job that we're doing without an appropriation that's attached, but within the agencies and within the RFPs that go out and just build the new climate and build new attention. And we could all become as enthusiastic as Mr. King was.
Representative Eastland.
Thank you. Representative Solberg, I can't help but respond a little bit because you talked about arguing against yourself. I agree with both things you said. I don't think you were arguing against yourself. But I think the point that I was trying to make was that there are a lot of good suggestions here that maybe we need to be going forward on. But we're in the wrong economic time right now. That all of these things are going to add some level of regulation and cost that's going to add to the already burdensome regulatory environment that we live in. And I'm not saying that they're not valid or not good or we shouldn't pursue them, but I just think it's the wrong time right now to be pushing more regulation onto contractors and onto the building industry because they're just trying to get themselves going, and to add more requirements on them is an additional burden that really I don't think they need right now, and these are certainly valid things we could talk about going forward, but I think the economic time is wrong right now.
Well, here are just some summary, I've been taking notes about your responses, and to Representative Solberg's unintended consequences, I myself had a bill that MMB pointed out would have unintended consequences. We were going to offer that bill shorter reporting periods for cancellation and put it on the agenda, and then I heard from the relevant agency, well, there are some consequences to that. And at the time, we didn't really have time to spend much on that. But I do think there is, any time you spend taxpayer dollars, there are going to be some people who say, well, if we're spending state dollars, we ought to do it this way, or we ought to think about X. And so they offer amendments. I know the Anderson one, for example, tracking jobs, I think that's been offered at least the last 3 years on the floor. I feel a little irresponsible when we offer an amendment and add an amendment like the E-Verify, and then in conference committee, I discover new information and then say, well, gosh, we've got to take that out. And so I had the sense one at least ought to have a discussion here. And here are the suggestions I heard from this group. I heard some of you suggest, and I actually think Representative Mullery is going to do some interim work on some of these issues, that some of this may require interim policy work and that has more time and then may be brought forward next year. I heard Representative Mahoney say, maybe we ought to say in bonding that the policy related to a particular, for example, the PCA piece, ought to be introduced in the relevant committee where they do the vetting. For example, PCA offered today to testify on that particular one. Because we're not moving it forward, I didn't think we needed to do that. But it would give them an opportunity to weigh in. That would be one approach, to say we don't really do policy in capital investment, we do it in the relevant committee where a particular part of the bill is shaped. Another one that I didn't hear today is that we would simply advise an author, if you have policy, move it as a separate bill. We'll hear it, and then it can go to whatever other relevant committees it needs to, but it would just move as a separate bill. And then one other possibility, and I can't remember who mentioned this, it was outside of this discussion today. In some cases, when we've discussed some of these issues, MMB sort of has taken some of those ideas and incorporated them into their process as they have worked with projects going forward. So I think there are a number of ways we could do this moving forward without just running roughshod over somebody's idea. So I don't know if there's any particular response to that summary. Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, just having gone through putting together House File 671, which is a number people will get to know better in the next few days, budget balancing bill, that was one of the things that we tried to encourage the division chairs in that case, who are ultimately going to be the authors of their division report that would be incorporated, was to take major policy initiatives and deal with those separate bills. Now, quite honestly, sometimes it's in the eye of the beholder, because sometimes they felt certain policy that might have been in a bit of a gray area, at least in my opinion, but I'm just one opinion, they felt was needed to support their initiatives within their division's report. But by and large, from the get-go, we said, well, deal with the policy, if at all possible, with a separate bill, and only include those things that are needed to support the appropriation. You know, and I was sort of thinking here of consequences when Representative Clark was presenting hers on carpeting, and I'm not making a judgment on the health aspects, but after World War II, I represent the city of Robbinsdale. A lot of Robbinsdale was built after World War II. And if you were going to finance your home with the GI Bill, and remember after World War II, the number of
people returning from having served in the armed forces. There was a requirement if you financed it with a GI Bill, you had to have hardwood floors. And so what happened was that the contractors built all of the houses with hardwood floors, because when you think about it, you don't know who the buyer was going to be. It turned out to be quite a nice thing when I door knocked through parts of Robbinsdale and people opened these doors, and now with the popularity of hardwood floors, they're beautifully finished and they look really nice. My father was one of those. Five children, the first thing he did to protect those hardwood floors, and they lived in the house about 50 years, they put carpet down before the day we moved in. And to sell the house, we took the carpeting up, and that became a big selling point after my mother had passed away, that this house had these beautiful hardwood floors. But at any rate, sometimes what you do here is my point. When you have certain requirements, sometimes certain things happen that you don't necessarily anticipate. And I would view that long term, that was a good thing with that GI Bill requirement, although it probably did drive the cost at the time. I don't know how the cost of carpeting might have prepared, you know, with hardwood floors, but there might have been a cost factor there as well. I'm not getting into the health issue, just what happens sometimes when you adopt policy.
Well, I wanted to take seriously all of the members, and you know, a number of them had introduced bills and had requested hearings, and it seemed to me to be a good time to say how does that fit in a bill of this type, and this has been helpful for me, and we'll perhaps have some ongoing conversation with MMB about some of the ideas that that were raised. But at least for now, I think we've had an opportunity to hear them. Representative Clark.
Can I, just a little clarification on what you're saying. One of these bills, one of these ideas we did take into a separate bill. I didn't do the one on carpeting, although I raised it in every place practically that we went on the tour and asked people about it, on the bonding committee tour. When I saw the problems, like in our colleges and so on, we have lots of people with allergies and asthma, and this is a very serious health concern that we now know. We didn't know it. You know, I would suggest that Representative Carlson, your dad didn't know that you know, carpets are one of the big traps
that
for.
That was back in the 50s.
Yeah, but I mean, it's right, and so people didn't know, and so I'm just thinking that I think I'm past deadline on being able to do something about that. So I just want to. It is a really serious concern that I'm just wondering if at some point you could advise me. I mean, maybe I could still propose this in my own committee and put it into a health bill or something, but I really don't want to let that one go. It's something that we already have evidence, at least in our housing finance agency in my jurisdiction, that it makes a lot of difference in the health, especially of children.
Ma'am, I tried to make it clear I was not making a judgment on her bill, just pointing out that sometimes a policy leads to certain behaviors is all.
Yeah, I wasn't actually even referring to your comments, but I'm just wondering if you have some advice then, maybe after the committee or whatever.
I don't know if anybody in the any of the agencies have any particular thought about that particular one. Otherwise, I was just going to follow up on that issue with MMB just to get some advice from them in terms of what if something like that were attached, what would the implications be? Since we I would just simply have followed up with them.
Okay. And if you can let me know, because then maybe I will try to initiate a separate bill. Thank you.
So I think we've covered all of the ideas and maybe a couple of suggestions. And we know at least some work will happen, and that is Representative Mullery in the interim. We, as far as I know, we have completed our work for this session. We have a bill enacted, and so our work is done. Any other business? If not, thank you all. There are people around this table who have put in just enormous hours. If you traveled with us, and I thank you so much for investing time and energy.
Madam Chair, when you mentioned the travel, aren't you giving out any awards this time?
We aren't giving out awards this time. There was a little contest that we were just obviously a little nervous about the rules, and we thought we might might offend.
Representative Junkie isn't here to defend his position.
Well, then you're it. You won. He gets the award. Meeting is adjourned.